Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma put up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Thursday, November 18th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning. Good morning, Menaces. I'm really excited to talk today about some coaching news, some coaching changes, coaching contracts, and going to talk a little bit about some drama with a former Buckeye. You know, it's funny when you get to these situations, right? When you recruit as well as Ohio State recruits, you're going to have some kids that just don't play, right? They're not the top guy. They're not your starter. And they end up either transferring or just not playing, maybe giving up football. I know a couple kids that you know, after 3 years, they're like, you know what? This is not for me. I don't feel like transferring and going somewhere else. And obviously, there's scenarios like Joe Burrow, right, where he leaves and actually achieves success. And people look at Ohio State like, how did you let Joe Burrow leave? Like, idiots. And it always becomes like, you guys are so dumb. It's like, no, well, at the time, we thought that the best move was Dwayne Haskins. And to be honest with you, in that scenario, Chris, it was the best option. I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but people forget that Joe Burrow, the year that Dwayne Haskins started, was not as good a quarterback as Dwayne Haskins was that year, right? Correct. Joe Burrow ended up grinding, working hard, getting a new coordinator, and had a better year than Dwayne Haskins ever had the following year. But the first year he after transfer,
I think he only had 16 touchdowns.
Yeah, and it's just people forget that they see the end result, right? Like, oh, well, Joe Burrow won a Heisman and number one overall pick. And it's like, yeah, that was 2 years later. Like, when you had to make the decision who was going to start, who was the better player? And the answer was Dwayne Haskins. Right. And we have another situation like that, though I have different opinions on it than most. Jameson Williams made a comment on Instagram Live that OSU fans don't mess with him like that or don't claim him. He said, they don't claim me, I don't claim them. And basically was saying they were disrespectful to him. And a bunch of OSU fans and OSU, I guess, beat reporters, coverers, I don't know what you want to call them, podcasters, all kinds of people, have kind of jumped in defense of Buckeye Nation, saying, all I ever saw was people wishing him luck. And, you know, no one was ever disrespectful to him. And so I'm interested in your thoughts first, Chris, and then I will sound off.
Well, dog, so I'm a big, you know, I'm a big Ohio State fan. I'm a big Jameson Williams fan. And I kind of was beating the table for him in my living room. Of course, I wasn't in a coach's room about him getting more touches last year. And when it happened, I remember being on message boards and seeing guys kind of just slander him behind the scenes on message boards. I remember one poster made a comment about him transferring, said he's probably going to end up at a school like Mizzou or Kentucky because he was being quote unquote blanketed by Big Ten corners. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, yes. You know, I did see a lot of Ohio State fans wishing him well, but it was almost like a wishing him well, but he'll never be this. And it kind of frustrated me a little bit from someone who I thought that Jameson Williams was super talented, supremely talented, rare deep speed, like you had talked about. It was almost like we couldn't kind of comp. I mean, when he started having success is kind of when it started rubbing me the wrong way. It's like, oh, look, the fourth best receiver at Ohio State is the first best receiver at Alabama. And that kind of started the tone of you couldn't hear any Ohio State fan talking about Jameson Williams without saying, oh, well, he would have been the fourth best receiver here. It's like, gee whiz.
Well, the reality is this. He never was the fourth best receiver here. He would not be the fourth best receiver here now. That is a fan's take that has a hard on for players, right? They see Jackson Smith and Jigba against a slow defense, run a 4-7 and score a touchdown, and their dick gets hard. And they're like, oh my God, Jackson Smith and Jigba is so good. And it's like, yeah, he's a really good player. He's not better than Jameson Williams. Just stop it. You take your fan glasses off. Like, this kid has a skill set that no one else has. He's going to be the number one receiver taken in the NFL draft. So the question is, could he be the fourth best receiver at Ohio State, but the NFL views him as the best receiver in the country this year? Like, is that possible? Or yeah, maybe the fans know more than the millions of dollars in NFL research and you know, Alabama's ability to develop. Is that what it is? Alabama's just that much better at developing him. Please save the narrative that, no, I mean, he's all they got. Like, what? Mm-mm. Alabama? He's all Alabama's got?
Mm-mm.
I mean, that's, just so we're clear, just so we're clear, the secondaries he's going against in the SEC are far and beyond comparison to any secondary that Ohio State has played to date, right? Maybe Clemson, you could say was a really good secondary. Alabama last year, right? So this year, Ohio State has played dog shit secondaries, and Jameson Williams has played far better players, and he's mm-hmm. gotten off. He's getting off. That's the first point. Is he never was and never will be the fourth best receiver at Ohio State. Now,
and Zach, it wasn't just fans guilty of this. Like, there were a lot of writers guilty of this too. I remember being, you know, I love Ross Fulton. I think he's a really good dude, really smart dude. But him talking about late in the year, kind of going out on a whim, saying that Jameson Williams was probably the fourth receiver on the team, people ran with it. It's like, wait, where are you getting that from? Because in the biggest games of the year, guess who was a part of the game plan? Jameson Williams. The coaches were telling us that in the big games and the big spots, they trusted Jameson Williams more than they trusted JSN. And then magically, no, he's a fourth best receiver. Like, in that, did the Clemson game evaporate last year, Zach? Like he had more receiving yards, I think, than Garrett Wilson in the game. He caught the big bomb in that game. Like, he was in that game when it mattered most.
Yeah.
So it was a little sideways for me from start to finish, this whole Jameson Williams thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely sideways, but that's what happens when you listen to reporters who don't know anything. And I don't know Ross Fulton. I know he does like a breakdown, but like, he breaks down film. And honestly, half the time I watch it and I'm like, yeah, that's not even right. But okay. I mean, the guy knows, you know, someone knows what he's talking about, but he certainly can't evaluate receivers at a high level. I mean, to say Jameson Williams is the fourth best receiver on that roster is just absolutely absurd. Just absolutely absurd.
I mean, everyone was saying when this whole thing was going down, it was like, oh, well, JSN, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, I also can see them being first rounders, but I can't see Jameson Williams being a first rounder. And it's like, whoa, like, wait a second. Like, no one in the country has his skill set. He's one of one with that skill set, right?
No, there's no question. Yeah, I mean, he's just different. He's different, and just let's hold the phone on Jaxon Smith-Njigba being a first rounder. He's a great player, but yeah, so
they were saying this last year.
So was KJ Hill. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, just because you're a really, really productive and really good player doesn't mean you're a first round draft pick. You actually have to have NFL skill and NFL speed for the most part to be that. Now, I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba has a real chance to be a high draft pick and be a, you know, an NFL superstar. I'm not sitting here shitting on Jaxon Smith-Njigba at all. I think he's a great player, but let's just hold off on he's a first round draft pick. He's so far from a first round draft pick today. He's young. He's got another year of development to have that conversation. I think Chris Olave is a late first rounder. I think Garrett Wilson is definitely a first rounder. You know, Chris might be a early second rounder, depending on, you know, personnel and team needs, but how he tested
the combine, I think, is really important for him.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, but anyways, it's just, I'm not here for the Jameson Williams slander, but I'm also, I think it's important to note two things. One, I think this is kind of a Michael Jordan effect. Jameson Williams is kind of has created an edge in his own mind and a chip on his shoulder. Like, he feels disrespected because Ohio State did kind of push him out the door. Right. They did. I mean, we can say that he wanted to leave because he wasn't going to play. That's not true. Ohio State didn't utilize his skill set and he wasn't happy. And at the end of the year, he wanted things to change. And Ohio State mm-hmm. basically just said, well, things aren't going to change. And you're probably going to be fourth out of four.
Yeah. And I think Ohio State, they made, this is the decision they made before people are saying, well, he couldn't, you know, he wasn't good enough to play. No, here was the issue. Garrett Wilson is probably, to me, at least in my lifetime, the best receiver to ever touch a blade of grass at Ohio State. They opted to move him outside where he naturally belongs, and they evaluated him as a better outside guy than Jameson Williams. That's just how it is, and Jameson Williams is not a better inside guy than Jaxon Smith-Njigba. That's just how it is, and I believe that is why he opted to leave, which makes sense. The issue for Ohio State is I don't think they needed to do that. I think they could have left.
They didn't need to do that.
Yeah,
There's never a scenario in the history of the game of football where you show a first rounder the door. I don't give a shit who you have. You find a way to play him. And to Ohio State fans that feel like, you know, that he was fourth of four and he transferred because he was going to be fourth string. Like, no bullshit. You can't go look at 2018 Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Or 2019 Alabama, I guess it was.
Yeah, Judy Ruggs.
four first rounders in that room, right? Jerry Jeudy, Devontae Smith, Henry Ruggs, and who's the fourth one?
Waddle.
Oh, Jalen Waddle. Mm-hmm. Four of them in the same room, all playing, all getting touches, all happy, all getting utilized. Just because you move, Garrett Wilson should have never played slot. I mean, that's fine that they moved him there, but that honestly was not best suited for him, right? You don't need to move him in the slot just so you can play Jameson Williams outside. Jameson Williams and Chris Olave can play a ton, right? Mm-hmm. Devin Smith wasn't a starter at Ohio State, really. I mean, he was. He played, you know, I always said I had six starters, but Evan Spencer played as much or more than Devin Smith. It doesn't mean you don't have packages and scenarios and situations and plays where Jameson Williams is the best fit or best utilized skill set for that concept, and you put him in the game, right? And you just have to know how to do it. And I guess Brian Hartline maybe doesn't know how to do it.
And he's still learning. I love Brian Hartline, but the reason we are chasing schools like Alabama is because they are able to keep and stack talent at those positions. Like, that's just it.
That is it. That is it. And so it's a grave error, mm-hmm. especially if Ohio State has to face Alabama. Now, not only did you lose a first rounder, but you gave him to the team that you have to defend. Like, brilliant. Really fucking smart move. And when he is going to play with a vengeance in that game. But
if we get there,
if Ohio State gets there, and if Bama gets there, they might lose to Georgia and get knocked out. So who knows? Maybe they'll play in the Rose Bowl or something.
do you fault Jameson for what he said, or do you fault the, you know, his dad for the comments he made about Ohio State?
I mean, his dad's a real one. And I think you keep that stuff behind closed doors, but his dad didn't like the stuff that was being said. Like, his son was the fourth best receiver on the team because he didn't believe it's true. And I don't believe it's true, obviously. And so, I mean, I think that's something you keep behind closed doors. You want to have in life, right? In life, let alone in football, you want to have as many fans of you as possible, right? And why you would try to negate or neglect or, I guess, offend a fan base where, you know, some of them might be like, oh, fuck that kid, he left, or he stinks anyways, we have better players. Some of them,
a lot of us were wishing him good luck. A lot of us.
Yeah. But there were people who identified his abilities and his skill set and were sad to see him go. I think he genuinely middle finger in the air to everyone that says, good luck, man, we understand. It's like, no, fuck you. You don't understand. I'm good enough to play at Ohio State, and they're acting like I'm not. Like, that's not good luck, man. You know, we understand. No, that's disrespectful to a kid that views himself as an elite player. It's like, good luck, we understand. No. It should be like, oh man, the coach has made a mistake, but so we hope you are successful. That's different, right? That to him is not disrespectful.
And a lot of these dudes are cut from a different cloth. Like, Jameson's cut from a different cloth. Like, he, you know, it just, you can kind of see it on the field. Like, he, the ultimate chip on his shoulder, super competitive. Like, he wants to win, and he wanted to be respected more than he was.
So, like I said, I think you always keep it behind closed doors. I don't think saying things publicly about a former school, former coach, or a former fan base is ever a good idea, because you want as many fans as possible, right? Like, those people, you know, Ohio State's fan base is huge. What if he gets drafted by the Browns? Shit. I mean, 90% of their fans are Buckeye fans. Now you pissed off Buckeye fans, and now you go to Cleveland, and you don't have as big of a market, because those fans remember when you were, like, talking shit about them. And so now, you know, when you say go to Subway and get a 6-inch sub because you're getting paid to say it, they're like, fuck you, I'm going to Jersey Mike's.
I'll push back on that a little bit, because, you know, Baker planted a flag, and now the whole, like, Northeast Ohio is still brainwashed, you know, obsessed with him.
Yeah. I mean, to an extent, he also, I think they can view that, they can spin that, right? They can view that as passionate, like, about his
Cleveland
team.
Tough.
They can say, well, if he did that to the Bengals, it would be badass. Like, if he planted a Browns flag in the middle of the Steelers logo, I'd be fucking hype. You know what I mean? Like, they can spin that. He didn't directly say Ohio State fans are garbage, right?
Why do you think the tone was so different about Jameson Williams than it was about Joe Burrow?
I don't think it was much different at all.
Really?
I mean, I think they felt the same way. When Joe Burrow transferred, they were like, oh man, yeah, he's not as good as Dwayne. We understand, Joe. Wish you the best. And then, like, as they say, it's just funny, fan base in Ohio State is the best or the worst, depending on how you want to spin it, at being like, yeah, he wasn't as good as Dwayne, but we wish him the best. And then he goes to
that
LSU.
Was me all over Twitter. Damn it.
Like, then he goes to LSU, wins a Heisman, wins a national championship, number one overall pick, and they're the same people that said he was, oh, well, he wasn't as good as Dwayne, but we understand, are tweeting hashtag developed here. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, what is it? And they're already doing it with Jameson Williams. Like, hashtag developed here. It's like, no. Timeout. No. Hashtag shown the door here. Like, he wasn't developed here. This is all Bama. Bama's developing and utilizing him. Ohio State didn't. Ohio State gets no credit for Jameson Williams and no credit for Joe Burrow. They don't, because he left.
Can I read Randy Wade's tweet on here?
Please do.
He said, hey, Randy Wade, shout out Randy. He tweeted this about Jameson Williams. He said, just imagine you're a man and you feel like someone put duct tape around the head of your nuts for 3 to 4 years, or ahead of your dick for 3 to 4 years. Going through the motion, but you just can't, you know, basically get off. Then you transfer to Nick Saban in Alabama. They say, here's the problem. You have tape on your dick, and now you're just nutting all over the field. He said he's nutting all over the field.
Talk about a real one.
Yeah, a real one.
I mean, that's what it's like, right? You're in a relationship with a girl that won't let you get past second base. You break up. You find a girl that's as attractive, and all of a sudden, you're smashing every night. Like, that's the difference, right? And it is what it is. But you know what? Like, I don't know. I said it when he announced he was going to transfer. I'm disappointed. Like, I talked to him probably 20 times after he announced he was transferring. He was going to come on the podcast, and I honestly didn't push it hard enough or really get it organized well enough. So I'll get him on probably. I mean, I'll wait till after the season. Obviously, he'll be on the show though for sure, and you'll get to hear firsthand what went down, because the reality is we all don't know. I mean, I know better than probably anyone else other than the people involved, because him and I talked so much after he decided to leave. But the story is not always what it's made out to be. So he has a chip on his shoulder for a reason. And honestly, I know the reason better than any of you listening, but I still don't know the real reason, right? It's a lot like, you know, someone that says that my husband beat me. It's like, well, were you there? Do you really know what happened? Like, what happened between Brian Hartline and Jameson Williams? Like, nobody really knows except those two, right?
Yeah. So look, if that right there is not a reason for you to add this to your library, I don't know what the fuck you're even doing. Like, right. That's gonna be unreal. I hope that hopefully we can pull that off. But Zach, I do want to move forward to some big news in the Big Ten, Michigan State Week, and somebody not named Ryan Day is getting some Ryan Day money. Looks like Mel Tucker's getting close to that 10 years, $95 million.
10 years, $95 million. It'll make him the highest paid coach, certainly in the Big Ten. That's actually, he'll be making $3.5 million per year more than Ryan Day. So just
more than Ryan Day money.
Let that sink in for a minute. Now, honestly,
as a black man, let's go, doc. Yeah, go ahead.
Honestly, I think this is a gangster move by Michigan State, and it is them saying, you know what, we really think we found our guy, and we're not going to be a stepping stone school, right? We want to be a destination school. We want to be like Ohio State, Penn State. Like, people from Penn State don't, I mean, I guess they can, right? James Franklin's is entertaining the USC job, but that's mainly because he hasn't been able to succeed at Penn State the way he wants, not because USC is that much of a better job. So I think Michigan State basically doubled down. They said, you know what, we're going to pony up. We're going to pay the money. Make, you know, get this guy locked in, and then what they're going to have to do is then take that same approach to staff salaries, recruiting budgets, facilities. And if they do that, that's how you level up. You got to spend money to make money, right? It's the old adage. And it's huge. It's huge. They saw LSU kind of knocking at the door, and they were like, that's my man. Like, no. So
we are not doing that today. Not doing that today.
No doubt. So huge, huge for Mel Tucker. Awesome for him. And I've been such a huge Mel Tucker fan all year. And not just because they've been successful, or PJ or Kenneth Walker, or, you know, not even that, but just his swagger, his energy, right? That the way he coaches, kind of his demeanor with his team, after they win, the pictures with cigars by the pool. Like, I'm just with it. Like, dude gets it. And what he did is one of the most impressive things I've seen in my time in college football. To flip that roster in one offseason is just unbelievable. So yeah, very, it's well deserved, that's for sure. And I think it's time for Gene Smith to open up that checkbook, because if you think LSU is tempting to Mel Tucker, imagine what you know, the Patriots are going to look like to Ryan Day, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, that's probably a ways away with Bill. Bill will probably die on the sideline. But either way, I mean, that, Ryan Day eventually will entertain the idea of going to the NFL. I think it'll be after a championship or two at Ohio State, but he will entertain it. And it's going to take Gene Smith to open up that checkbook and cut a fat old check, because if Michigan State's paying 9.5, Ohio State better be ready to pay 11.
For sure. That's 100% in. And that's kind of my one of my secondary thoughts is Ryan Day. But first, I think about, you know, Michigan and Michigan State all of a sudden. I mean, this is a chance for little brother to kind of pass big brother, because Mel Tucker being there for a while, I have more faith in his program building ability than I do of Jim Harbaugh. I think that he's going to get results, continue to get results very quickly. And Penn State at the same time, you know, they've kind of been on the downside a little bit. So Franklin either has to leave or he's got to really up it, because the Big Ten's getting tougher and tougher and tougher. And then my thoughts go to LSU. Like, what is LSU going to do? And the name that keeps being floated around there, you know, OU people are saying, no, it's not going to be Link. LSU fans are saying, yeah, it's going to be Link. Just wait on it. Lincoln Riley to LSU, does it have legs? And if you're Lincoln Riley, would you even go to LSU?
Well, first of all, you made a comment that I vehemently disagree with. The little brother in that rivalry is Michigan. It is not Michigan State.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
10-4 in the last 14 meetings. That's, you can't call them little brother anymore, right? They've been beating that ass, and they've won the last two. So it'd be one thing if Michigan won the most recent one. You could be like, oh, big brother, they won. No. Michigan State won the last two. They're 10-4 in the last 14. That is, Michigan is little brother now. And if you don't believe it, look how much big brother's getting paid now compared to little brother Jimbo.
Oh, you're right. Okay, big brother reminded you why he's big brother. Sorry, Yoder. You know, I was trying to slip that in there. My mom went to Michigan, Zach. Well, so like, I try to
everyone give Michigan makes a little mistakes, of, Chris. Everyone hey, makes I, mistakes. You know,
I try to give Michigan a little bit of love. My mom's now at Penn State, so I was trying to get Penn State some love. Yeah. But all right.
We thought you were a Buckeye.
No, I am. Don't get it twisted. I'm here today. I stand proud.
You're that Buckeye. You're like my sister. My sister's a Lions fan, a Steelers fan, a Browns fan, and a Packers fan. It's like, wait a minute. I don't know if you can do that. No, I'm just kidding. She's actually not. I made that up, but she is a Lions fan. But anyways, yeah, the LSU job, Lincoln Riley, would he take it? I think he should take it, but I don't think he won't take it. I think LSU's a job. You look at it, and I can't remember who it was. Dang it, I should know this. But on Twitter, one of the 247 guys that I really like, and I can't remember which one it was, otherwise I would tell you. But he posted, like, LSU is a place that recruits itself. Like, three different coaches have won a national championship in the, you know, last 20 years. It's a place that it honestly recruits itself. Like, the state of Louisiana is locked down. I mean, you just have to do a good job and you're going to get every great player in the state. And there's a ton of them. And then you look at, and my response to it was, yeah, three different coaches won a national championship there. And two of them were below average coaches. Right? Like, Les Miles is a fucking joke. Eddie O doesn't know dick about football. He just knows, how to talk like that, you know, have some energy, and he knows how to get D linemen to play hard. He's a D line coach. Like, he's not a typical head coach. We talked about it on one of the shows, just about, like, what does it take to be a great head coach? Like, that charisma, that presence, that leadership, like, comparing the difference between Ryan Day and, you know, a Dan Mullen, for instance. And Ed Orgeron doesn't have that.
Didn't Ed O openly admit that Joe Burrow was far smarter than him the second he walked in the door from transferring?
Well, absolutely. But I would imagine Eddie O is also a real guy, so he probably knows he's rarely even close to the smartest in the room.
Yeah, he said that Joe was explaining the offense that they ran at Ohio State to him. He didn't know what was going on.
That sounds about right. Well, Joe's a really smart kid too. But I mean, so that's just the reality of it, right? And you get to go play big boy football. I mean, the Big 12 is awful football. It's awful. And if you're going to be in the SEC next year, who would you rather be? Would you rather be the Cajuns in Louisiana or Oklahoma? Oklahoma's about to get run through. I mean, honestly, it's going to be like when Missouri joined the SEC. It's like, oh, God. Oh, no, why? Why'd you do that? Like, why would you make that move? And so
it's not going to be a Texas A&M thing where Texas A&M has some success early and then falls off. You think they'll just get run through like that? Yeah, they're going
to
get run
through. I think they got a ways to go before they compete in the SEC, both them and Texas. But so that's just my opinion. Now, will Lincoln Riley take it? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, you got to think, he's a longtime Oklahoma guy. He got the Oklahoma job when he absolutely did not deserve it, right? Bob Stoops handed it to him. If you don't remember the story, Bob Stoops resigned in like May, so there was no other option but to let Lincoln be the head coach at least for that year. And then Lincoln did a great job, and so they removed the interim tag and made him the full-time head coach. And so he was really gifted that, and not that he didn't deserve it, you know.
It was similar to how Ryan Day got the Ohio.
Oh, it's exactly the same. Yeah. And I think it's not that he didn't deserve it. It was that he just, you don't do that at a big place like Oklahoma. You don't give a guy a chance that's never been a head coach. That's just not what you do, and you know, traditionally. So I believe he has a lot of loyalty to Oklahoma for that. His mentor is also Bob Stoops, who, you know, was the forever coach of Oklahoma. He was mentioned when jobs came open every year. I mean, every time the Florida job came open, they're like, Bob Stoops is going to return to Florida. And you're like, no, he's not. He's going to stay at Oklahoma. Like, so his mentor is a loyal guy. So I would imagine Lincoln is going to remain loyal to Oklahoma, but the LSU job is intriguing.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, if I was Lincoln, and you know, obviously if Oklahoma did all that for me, I might be loyal to them too, but they didn't. So I would leave Oklahoma.
Lincoln to LSU is interesting, Zach, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think if Lincoln goes to LSU, I think they get Arch Manning, and that's the 2023 quarterback, obviously, you know, part of the Manning family, number one overall player. I think that he would go then from Newman High School on to LSU because I know the Mannings are serious about having a quarterback developed, and he's like regarded as a offensive wizard and a QB guy. But Zach, if I'm Lincoln Riley, you know, I know you would go to LSU, but I think there's two other schools I would look to go to before LSU. First of all, I think I would go to Florida before I went to LSU for a couple reasons. I think Florida is a more talent-rich state, and I think they are quarterback development away from being, you know, a very good football school. I mean, we saw Kyle Trask was able to, you know, had a little bit of talent, had some QB talent, and they were able to do some big things. I think the state of Florida is just so rich with talent, richer than Louisiana. But above both those schools, if I'm Lincoln Riley, I think I would go to USC first. I think I would look to go to USC first for a couple of reasons. First of all, the state of California is the most talent-rich state. They produce quarterback after quarterback after quarterback, that West Coast, you know, style. Second of all, they'll be playing in the awful Pac-12. So instead of, you know, getting run through it in the SEC or having to deal with that gauntlet, you could go out there and build a very good team, a team that competes for the Pac every year. And then you would also get the talent-rich state. And he fits the mold of how, you know, a USC coach would look. You know, he's cool. He's got the charisma. He's a quarterback guy. I mean, I think he could build a very quick powerhouse there at USC. And then, you know, maybe down the road, because I think that something you're going to start seeing from a lot of young coaches is positioning themselves to be in the right place at the right time when that Alabama job opens up.
Yeah. I don't know much, but I do know enough about college football coaching that the last person in the world you want to be is the coach that follows Nick Saban. Like you do not want to. I would love to be the coach that follows the coach that followed Nick Saban, right?
That's fair.
I mean, it's what happened. That was my grandfather, right? My grandfather followed Woody Hayes and I mean, did a great job, but he wasn't, you know, he didn't win a national championship in 9 years. And he wasn't, you know, maybe up to Woody Hayes' success rate. And so they called for his head. And then John Cooper came in and was fucking terrible and stayed forever. Couldn't beat Michigan, couldn't win anything, and stayed forever. He was at Ohio State forever because he was the guy that followed the guy that followed Woody Hayes, right? You never want to follow Nick Saban. Well, I do want to end with this last topic, Chris, that I just was popped in my head. Matt Campbell, Iowa State, right? Mm-hmm. Done an outstanding job there. Obviously, Iowa State is a very hard place to recruit to and win, but done an outstanding job. Did a great job at Toledo. I think he's one of the better coaches in the country. Certainly will get a big-time job when the fit is right. He made a comment in an interview yesterday that his goals for his team have never been about winning a Big 12 championship. It's about being – and then he gave some bullshit coach speak. It's about being the best version of you. It's like, what? Whoa, timeout. Your goal is not ever been to win a championship? What? Like, what are you talking? I get it if you took the fucking, like, I don't even know. Like, if you came to the Big Ten and took the, I don't know, not even Northwestern. Like, Pat Fitzgerald's goal is to win the Big Ten championship. It is. And he's been, I mean, he's done it once, yeah. And he's been, I think he's done it once, but he's been really close, right?
I mean, they were in the Big Ten title game last year.
Yeah, no doubt. No, and I'm saying they've been close. And mm-hmm. So that's just asinine that a coach would say that. Your goal has never been to win the Big Ten champion or the Big 12 championship. What the fuck is wrong with you then? How is that not your goal? And I get this bullshit about, we're just trying to be the best version of you. Go hard every day, man. High effort, high intensity. Shut the fuck up. That all that stuff is program culture, and you demand that, right? Be the best version of you. Like, that's a mantra to live by. That's not a goal. That's a goal that you cannot evaluate, right?
That should be the requirement for when you get in the door to play at this school.
Right. But not only requirement, but that's the process, right? Mm-hmm. Our goal is to win. Here's what he should say. Our goal is to win the Big 12 championship. And you know how we're going to do that? We're going to strive to be the best version of ourselves every day, right? That's a process goal. That's not an end goal. Mm-hmm. And for him to say that, I'm sitting here like, what is wrong with you? Yeah, like, no, your goal better be to win the Big 12 championship, because I don't know why else you play the game. Why do you play the game if not to try to win a championship? I mean, you can miss me with that bullshit. Like, for the love of the game, man. It's for my brothers, for the team.
Two losses of the coach speak.
Nobody plays for that. Not anymore. It's a different era. Maybe back in the 70s, right? It's like, and honestly, Urban Meyer talked about it all the time. Why do people fight in the military? Why do they fight? Right? Is it for the love of country? Like, they love the United States of America so much that they go risk their lives? Absolutely not. That's not why they go into a building where they might get shot and killed. That's not why. Based on military studies, this is not my opinion. This is what the military said, right? Mm-hmm. Is it because is it for self-preservation? Believe it or not, it's not, right? And if you think about it, self-preservation would tell you, don't go in that fucking building.
Yeah.
Right.
You'd be a couch potato. Yeah.
And so the number one factor of why our military in the United States is so elite, and why they do the insane things they do, like, you know, go into a building where death is imminent. Like, the reason why is because they've built a bond with their teammate. Their company with them, and they don't want to let that person down because they have such a trust built. And so they go in there because they're like, I fucking have to, man. I can't leave my guys behind, right? And that kind of contradicts what I just said about college football, but my point is that is why people play football, right? Really, really hard, because they go up and the left tackle gives relentless effort to block a defensive end, because he doesn't want his quarterback to get killed.
Right. It's about pulling your teammate. Like,
yeah, it's not pride for Ohio State. It's not even pride for themselves. It's like, man, I can't get CJ Stroud hit on this play. Right. Yeah. And that's what it is. But the point is that culture is a championship culture. It's not like some fucking book that you read about be the best version of you. Like, shut up, Matt Campbell. That is, I can't stand that shit. It's so phony. And honestly, I think he's saying that because they haven't won a Big 12 championship and they're not going to win it again this year. And it's like, oh man, that's not my goal. I want my goal to be achievable, and I haven't achieved it yet. But I just had to throw that out there. I think that's complete nonsense. Every school in the country should be striving to win at least a conference championship. Because if you're not, you shouldn't even be coaching or playing.
Absolutely. I mean, if you don't have the competitive want to win a conference title, to need to win a conference title, then you're full of shit. I mean, then you shouldn't be coaching. So
there's no doubt about it.
All right, Dog. Good show. And we'll be back with you tomorrow. And you have the main show coming up later today, correct?
Yeah, this afternoon, main show coming up. Going to preview the weekend and probably get a little gambling advice from a real handicapper, because the over on the second MAC game missed. And our handicapping team didn't have a good day either, because we took, who was it, Eastern Michigan, I think, to win. Whoever it was, they're in overtime on the 1 yard line, down by 6 or 7, and Buddy fumbles. Like, I mean, on the one, about to score to tie it up to go to double overtime, and a fucking guy fumbled the ball on the one. Like, how you do that? Talk about for your teammate. Like, just don't drop the football for your teammates, man. But
it's like that tweet. It's like, Mac is refreshing because You know, most people do, you know, try to do everything they can to win the game. The Mac does everything they can to lose the game.
Yeah, they're like, usually the Mac is so refreshing because most games you're watching two teams try to beat the other team. In the Mac, they're trying to figure out which team wants to lose more.
Absolutely brutal. I did just retweet a poll on our page, on the Menace to Sports page. Do you feel like once a Buckeye, always a Buckeye? Go engage with that. Go retweet that and vote on it. We want to get your votes in, and we like to do topics like that. But Zach, anything else?
No, that's it, man. I appreciate you. We'll see you later on my show and tomorrow on Menace in the Morning. Menace out. Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning time.
Wake 'em up. I don't do the most, but I do a lot. Tryna hide from the camera. I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on egg today.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma put up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case. That man be gone.